And we're going to give it to you today. Now, you have to bear in mind that everything you're going to... The situations, all of this, are strictly fictitious. This is a fictional drama, and it bears no resemblance to anything going on right now. And we have to say that because the FCC says that. Here we go, then, with the KPEN version of War of the Worlds. And you're going to hear their call letters an awful lot, but it was their production. Of course, anyone tuning in late is going to be a little bit confused, I think.
The Stereo Drama Workshop. Good evening, and welcome to the second in the KPEN series, the Stereo Drama Workshop. Tonight we will present our version, in FM multiplex stereo, of one of the most famous radio dramas ever presented, War of the Worlds, as adapted by Orson Welles' Mercury Theater from the story by H.G. Wells. It is with great pleasure that the KPEN Special Events Department joins with the San Francisco Theater, the Playhouse at Beach and Hyde, to recreate War of the Worlds. Please bear in mind that this radio adaptation, which so shook our nation in October of 1938, is a fictional dramatization. Good evening, and welcome to Starlight Concert. Presented each evening, Sunday through Friday, from KPEN's Nob Hill Studios in the Sky. Starlight Concert, a program of classical music on the Bay Area's finest fidelity station and presented in FM multiplex stereo. This is your host each evening for Starlight Concert, Wayne Jordan, inviting you now to join us for the next 1.5 hours of the greatest music the world has produced on Starlight Concert. Before we hear the overture to open this evening's Starlight Concert, here is a news bulletin which has just been handed me from the KPEN newsroom. At 5 minutes before Pacific time, Professor Alexander Farrell of the Mount Palomar Observatory reported seeing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity. The professor described the phenomenon as like a jet of blue flame shot from a gun, unquote. This has been a bulletin from the KPEN newsroom. We'll bring you any further developments, but now we open this evening's Starlight Concert from KPEN as we hear a performance of the Marriage of Figaro Overture by Mozart, performed by the Capitol Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Carmen Dragon. Ladies and gentlemen, we regret having to interrupt the opening work on this evening's Starlight Concert from KPEN, but we have a further news bulletin on the story from Mount Palomar Observatory reporting gas explosions on the planet Mars. The Government Meteorological Bureau has requested the nation's large observatories to keep an astronomical watch for any further disturbances occurring on the planet Mars. This has been another bulletin from the KPEN newsroom. And I have this further note before we get back to our music. We advise you to stand by for a direct report. We've been able to contact KPEN's Terry Smith, who lives in the East Bay and who is now on his way to the University of California in Berkeley with the KPEN stereo remote truck, complete with equipment for two-channel stereo broadcasting. Now, we've also been able to contact Dr. Raymond Lyons. He's the head of the astronomy department, who is now on his way to Lesher Observatory on the campus of the University of California. In fact, we should be able to bring you a direct report, well, within a few minutes. But right now, until that report's ready, we return you to our opening work on this evening's Starlight Concert. Once again, we regret very much having to interrupt this evening's Starlight Concert on KPEN, but I've just been informed that our microwave stereo remote unit is now set up, and we can bring you a direct report at this time from the University of California. Our own Terry Smith is there now at the Lesher Observatory with Dr. Raymond Lyons of the Astronomy Department, and we take you there now.
This is KPEN's Terry Smith, usually your host each morning on Spectrum. But this evening, I have, from what I've just been able to learn here, a very important assignment. I just finished dinner at my home in Castro Valley when I got the call to rush over here to Lesher Observatory. I'm standing with the KPEN stereo remote microphones in a large semicircular room, pitch black except for an oblong split in the ceiling. Through this opening, I can see a sprinkling of stars behind a huge telescope. The ticking sound you hear in the background is the vibration of the clockwork. Dr. Lyons is now standing directly above me on a small platform, is peering into a lens. I hope to be able to ask him a few questions in a moment. Now, we may be interrupted from time to time as the university's bringing in special phone lines to Lick Observatory and Mount Hamilton, and also to Mount Palomar. I see Dr. Lyons seems to be through gazing into the telescope now. Excuse me, Dr. Lyons.
Yes.
May I ask you a few questions now?
Yes, go ahead.
Let me see if I can't get up on this step and put one of these microphones a little closer to you. There. Now, sir, would you tell our audience exactly what you see as you observe the planet Mars through your telescope?
Well, nothing unusual at the moment. A red disk swimming in a black sea. Transverse stripes across the disk. Quite distinct now, because Mars happens to be at the point nearest the Earth, in opposition, as we call it.
What do these transverse stripes signify, Dr. Lyons?
No canals, I can assure you, Mr. Smith, although that's the popular conjecture of those who imagine Mars to be inhabited. From a scientific viewpoint, the stripes are merely the result of atmospheric conditions peculiar to the planet.
Are you saying, sir, that in your opinion, life as we know it doesn't exist on Mars?
I would say the chances against it are 1,000 to 1.
Well, how do you account for these gas eruptions that are occurring on the surface of the planet Mars at regular intervals?
Mr. Smith, I cannot account for it.
By the way, Doctor, for the benefit of our listeners, how far is Mars from the Earth?
Approximately 40 million miles.
Well, that seems like a safe enough distance. Just a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Someone has just handed Dr. Lyons a message. While he's reading it, let me remind you that this is Terry Smith speaking to you now by a special KPEN stereo remote from the Lesher Observatory on the campus of the University of California. I was sent here earlier by the KPEN News Department because an earlier bulletin... Oh, one moment, please. Dr. Lyons has just handed me a message which he received a moment ago. May I read this on the air, Doctor?
Certainly, Mrs. Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, I shall read you a message from Dr. Gray of the University Seismological Center. It says, quote, at 8:25 p.m. Pacific Time, the seismograph registered shock of almost earthquake intensity occurring within a radius of 20 miles of Berkeley. Please investigate. Dr. Lyons, could this recent occurrence possibly have something to do with the earlier disturbances on Mars?
Hardly. This is probably a meteorite of unusual size, and its arrival at this particular time is merely a coincidence. However, we shall conduct a search as soon as daylight permits.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lyons. Ladies and gentlemen, for about the past 10 minutes, we've been speaking to the head of the astronomy department, Dr. Raymond Lyons, here at the University of California campus. This is Terry Smith, returning you now to the Nob Hill studios of KPEN in San Francisco.
Thank you, Terry. While we've been bringing you the foregoing report from Berkeley, there have been many new developments, bulletins and phone reports pouring into our KPEN newsroom. We have called in our entire news staff to keep up with all the aspects of this most unusual story. First, I'll read you this latest bulletin. Professor Alexander Farrell at Mount Palomar now reports seeing a total of 3 explosions on the planet Mars since 7:55 this evening. Further confirmations on the explosions have been reported observed at 3 other points on the West Coast, including the observatory at Mount Davidson. Oh, I think I have the report I've been waiting for coming in. Just a moment, please, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, thank you very much. Yes, here is the report that we've been waiting to bring you. This event having happened just within the past 10 minutes. A huge flaming object that is believed to be a meteorite has landed close to the shore of the San Francisco Bay in the industrial park area of Richmond. It just missed a gasoline storage tank and caused a rather large crater in the earth. Incidentally, the flash was visible here at our Nob Hill studios. The sky lit up to the east, and both Gary Gilo and myself rushed to that side of the building. After the object struck the ground, the color of the glow changed to a soft, deep blue color, almost a... well, I guess we'd call it a purple haze. Our stereo remote crew has been dispatched to the scene and should be set up within a moment or two. In fact, we hope they'll be ready very shortly. I'm checking here with our engineer. No, I guess they're not ready quite yet. So we will return right now to this evening's opening work on our Starlight concert from KPEN. Ladies and gentlemen, I've just been given the signal here that our stereo remote crew is now set up and ready from Richmond. And I might add that we're certainly keeping James Gabbert and his technical crew very busy tonight. We were able to get Bill Campbell of United Press, who was on his way to cover the story, to bring you this eyewitness coverage. Come in, Bill Campbell. Are you ready, Bill? This is Wayne Jordan at KPEN. Tonight we've had... Are they ready now? Ladies and gentlemen, please bear with us. Things have been happening so suddenly this past 20 minutes. Now we seem to be ready to hear. Right now, we're ready to go there? Okay, fine. We take you now to United Press's Bill Campbell in Richmond.
This is Bill Campbell with the KPEN stereo room, standing just a few hundred yards from the East Shore Freeway. I was on my way across the Bay Bridge when the huge flash lighted up the almost dark sky. Unfortunately, I was on the lower ramp on my way to Berkeley, so I wasn't able to see much. Traffic slowed down for a few minutes, but kept right on moving again after the orange glow dimmed down. Right now, it's hard to paint a picture for you of what's happening here now. There's so much confusion. It's like a scene out of some modern Arabian Nights. As I mentioned, I just got here a few moments ago. But I haven't been able to take my eyes off that thing. Whatever it is, it's just a few hundred feet in front of me. I called it a thing because, frankly, I don't know what it is. It's sort of half buried in an enormous pit. It must have struck with a terrific force. It just missed a huge gasoline storage tank. If it had hit that, we might have had some real trouble to report about from over here in Richmond tonight. I see crowds of people all around. Curiosity seekers, I guess. And here he comes now. The police are letting Dr. Lyons, at least I think it's Dr. Lyons from nearby Cal. I was told he was coming right down here. Yes, it is Dr. Lyons from the Astronomy Department of the University of California. Dr. Lyons, over here, sir.
Yes.
I'm Bill Campbell of UP, covering this latest development for KPEN. Is this a meteor, sir?
Excuse me, I'm a little out of breath. I've hardly had a chance to look at it yet, but from what I can see, right there in front of me, it doesn't look like any meteor I've ever seen before.
It looks more like a cylinder, a huge cylinder of... what would you judge the diameter to be, Dr. Lyons?
About 30 yards.
About 30 yards in diameter. The metal of its sheath, or outer covering, is... Well, I've never seen anything like it. It's not quite iridescent, and it's of a yellowish-white color. It's hard to see much more, as there's so many curious spectators all around me. They keep pressing forward despite the police's attempt to hold them back.
All right, stand back there.
Here's the note. Let us through, please.
Stand back.
I've just been handed a note that we have here, standing next to me, an eyewitness to the meteor or whatever it is. What is your name, sir?
I'm Fred Wilmot.
What was that again, sir? Would you mind getting close to the microphone, as this confusion here is really...
I said Fred Wilmot.
What were you doing, Mr. Wilmot, when the object hit there?
I was over in the office over there, back in the last storage tank. I'm the night watchman for the oil company here.
And what did you see?
Well, it was what I heard first.
And what was that?
Oh, a hissing sound. Like this. Kind of like a 4th of July rocket.
And then what?
Well, I come out on the porch and the hissing was getting louder. And then, zingo, this greenish streak goes swish and bluey. Something smacked in the ground. About knocked me right down the steps.
Were you frightened, Mr. Wilmot?
Yeah, sure was. You know, it sort of came out of nowhere and, zingo, there it is.
Thank you, Mr. Wilmot. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there it is. I only wish that I could convey the atmosphere here now. It's a truly fantastic scene. Hundreds of cars, maybe thousands, are parked all along the freeway. Traffic is stalled as far as the eye can see. The police are trying to keep people back, but they're breaking through the lines and trying to get close to the edge of the crater to look in. It's so strange to see them there. What with all the cars' headlights on one side and that faint glow from whatever in the crater on the other side, it's one of the most unbelievable sights I've seen in my 20 years on news beats. The way people act. One young guy actually seems to want to get close enough to touch the thing. He's having an argument with a policeman. Right now, the policeman is winning. But how much longer they'll be able to contain this mob, I can't say. Oh, yes. Yes, there's something I was going to mention earlier, but I forgot about it in all the excitement. Right now, it's becoming much more distinct. Perhaps you've already been able to hear it. We'll have to try to get a hold of Dr. Lyons again and ask him... There, it's quite loud now. Can you hear it? It's a curious humming sound. A humming that seems to be coming from inside the object. It's not quite so crowded in front of me now. I'll move my microphone closer. There. Now. More than 25 feet away. Can you hear it now? The humming seems to be coming in waves of... Oh, there's Dr. Lyons now. Dr. Lyons!
Yes, what is it?
Would you tell our KPEN audience what that humming noise is?
I've also noticed a scraping noise as well as the humming noise in the last few minutes. I can only theorize that it's the unequal cooling of its surface.
Do you still think it's a meteor, Doctor?
I don't know what to think. The metal casing is definitely extraterrestrial, not found on this Earth. Friction with the Earth's atmosphere usually tears holes in meteorites. This thing is quite smooth and, as you can see, of cylindrical shape.
Just a minute. Excuse me, Dr. Lyons. Something's happening. Ladies and gentlemen, this is unbelievable. This end of the meteor, or whatever it is turning. It's like a top or something, or a lid. It's beginning to rotate like a screw. It's turning right before our eyes. The thing must be hollow.
She's moving.
Hands back there.
Maybe there's something inside.
What's happening up there?
Hey, it's turning out, Mac. It's really turning out.
I said before.
He's off.
Look out!
Oh,
Hayes has done it, but I don't believe it. But I've seen it. The top of the thing has come up. Now the onlookers are pressing forward so hard. Wait a minute. What's that? Wait. Is that something moving at the top? It is. It's something or someone. Yes. It's moving from the top. Something is crawling out of the top. I can't say what it is, but I can see two luminous discs. Are they eyes? Is it a face? Good heavens. Something's wriggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. And look there. There's another one and another. They look like tentacles to me. There. Now I can see the thing's body. It's large as a bear, and it glistens like wet leather. But that face, it's indescribable. I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it. The eyes are black and gleam like a serpent. The mouth is V-shaped with saliva dripping from its rimless lips that seem to quiver and pulsate. The monster, or whatever it is, can hardly move. It seems weighed down by possibly gravity or something. Now the thing's raising up. The crowd's falling back. It's watching it all. They've seen enough. This is the most extraordinary experience. I can't find words anymore to... I'm pulling this microphone as I walk. I'm afraid I'll have to stop this description until I can get... Perhaps I can get a liner on the gas storage tank. Hold on for just a moment.
This is Wayne Jordan back at the KPEN Nob Hill Studios. We're bringing you an eyewitness account of the strange, almost incredible happenings just across the bay in Richmond tonight. And as soon as we can, we have so many news bulletins to pass along to you. But right now, we return you to United Press's Bill Campbell in Richmond.
Ladies and gentlemen, am I on? Ladies and gentlemen, I am now about 20 feet up the ladder of this storage tank where I can get a good sweeping view of the scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk, as long as I can see. An interesting thing has happened. The state police, who are arriving in increasing numbers, have formed a cordon in front of the pit. But the crowds who pressed forward so eagerly before are now willing to keep their distance. The captain is conferring with someone I can't quite see who... Oh, yes, I believe it's Dr. Lyons. Yes, it is. Now they've parted. The doctor moves around to the left side of the crater while the captain and two policemen are advancing with something in their hands. Oh, I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. A flag of truce, I guess. If those creatures know what that means. What anything means... Wait, something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. And what's that? Seems to be a small beam of light against the mirror. Look out! There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror. It's leaping right at the advancing men. Now it strikes them head on. Oh, my Lord, look! They're turning into flame! Good Lord, the whole field's on fire! One of the state patrol cars is on fire. The fire is spreading everywhere. I'm going to have to get down to this gas tank. The fire's coming this way. I've got to get down it.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to bring you any further report at this time from Richmond. Until we can learn what has happened over there, we'll read some of the bulletins which have been pouring into our KPEN newsroom. Now, we've also been alerted to be ready to bring you a message from the commander of the California State Militia. In light of what we were just able to bring you, I read now the latest bulletin just handed me. Professor Hans Messmer, the president of the California Astronomical Society, addressing the annual dinner in San Diego, expressed an opinion on tonight's unusual happenings. He is of the opinion that the explosions on Mars are undoubtedly nothing more than severe volcanic disturbances on the surface of the planet.
Wayne, we just took this in by phone from Richmond, and we have that message from the commander of the state militia.
Fine. All right, I'll read this message first. At least 40 people, including 6 state troopers, lie dead in an industrial park area next to the Standard Oil Company's refineries in Richmond. Their bodies have been burned and distorted beyond all possible recognition. And now the next voice you hear will be that of Brigadier General Montgomery Smith, commander of the state militia at Sacramento.
I have been requested by Governor Brown of California to place Contra Costa County under martial law. No one will be permitted to enter the county except by special pass issued by state or military authorities. 4 companies of state militia are proceeding to the area and will aid in the evacuation of homes within range of military operations. Thank you.
You have been listening to General Montgomery Smith, commanding the state militia at Sacramento. In the meantime, further details are coming in now from Richmond. We can see now what a catastrophe must have happened over there. The strange creatures, after unleashing their deadly assault, crawled back into their pit, and made no attempt to prevent the efforts of the firemen to recover the bodies and to extinguish the fire. Combined fire departments of Richmond, Berkeley, and Oakland are fighting the flames which threaten the entire East Bay Hills. We incidentally haven't been able to establish contact with our mobile unit in Richmond, but we do hope to be able to return you there as soon as possible. In the meantime, there are some more bulletins coming in. I see something. Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, just a moment. Oh, I've been informed that we have finally established communications with an eyewitness to the tragedy. Dr. Lyons of the University of California has reached a phone and is standing by now.
Of the creatures in the rocket cylinder at Richmond, I can give you no authoritative information, either as to their nature, their origin, or their purpose here on Earth. Of their destructive instrument, I might venture some conjectural explanation. For want of a better term, I shall refer to the mysterious weapon as a heat ray. It's all too evident that these creatures have scientific knowledge far in advance of our own. It is my guess that in some way they are able to generate an intense heat in a chamber of practically absolute non-conductivity. This intense heat they project in a parallel beam against any object they choose by means of a polished parabolic mirror of unknown composition, possibly similar to laser light beams. That is my conjecture on what I've seen so far.
Thank you, Dr. Lyons. Ladies and gentlemen, here is a bulletin from Washington, D.C. Office of the Director of Red Cross reports 10 units of Red Cross emergency workers have been assigned to the state militia stationed outside Richmond. This message just in from the State Highway Patrol Office at the Bay Bridge Toll Plaza. It reports that the fires in and around Richmond and Berkeley are now under control. Scouts report also that all is quiet in the pit and no sign of life is appearing at the mouth of the cylinder. And now, at this time, I present the co-general manager of KPEN, Gary Gillow.
Thank you very much, Wayne. I just learned, by the way, that Bill Campbell of United Press, who was covering the story for KPEN in Richmond, is among those whose lives have been lost so far. In view of the gravity of this situation, we are placing our entire broadcast facilities, including our stereo remote unit, at the disposal of the state militia in Sacramento and its field forces.
Thank you very much, Gary. At this time, we take you now to the field headquarters of the state militia now set up near Richmond, California.
This is Captain Lansing of the Signal Corps, attached to the state militia now engaged in military operations in the vicinity of the industrial park area of Richmond. Situation arising from the reported presence of certain individuals of unidentified nature is now under complete control. Complete control. The cylindrical object which lies in a pit directly below our position is surrounded on all sides by 8 battalions of infantry, without heavy field pieces, but adequately armed with rifles and machine guns. The naval base at Treasure Island has been alerted in case of any serious trouble. But all cause for alarm, if such ever existed, is now entirely unjustified. The things, whatever they are, do not even venture to poke their heads above the pit. I can see their hiding place plainly in the glare of the searchlights here. The troops marching back and forth in front of the lights give the appearance of a real combat situation. There appears to be some smoke in the wooded area in the Berkeley Hills above our position. Probably started by some campers. Well, we ought to see some action soon. One of the companies is deploying on the left bank of the pit, another on the right bank. A quick thrust, and it'll all be over. Wait a minute. I see something on top of the cylinder. No, it's nothing but a shadow. There are close to 7,000 men surrounding this thing, this old metal tube or whatever. Wait, that wasn't a shadow. It's something moving. It's solid metal, like a shield rising up out of the cylinder. It's going up higher, higher and higher. Look at that. It's standing on its legs, actually rearing up on a sort of metal framework. Now it's reaching above the phone wires, and it's actually running.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, Both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes and ears lead to the inescapable assumption that those strange beings who landed in the industrial park area across the bay in Richmond tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars. From what we have been able to observe by telescope and even to the naked eye, one of the most unusual battles in the history of war has taken place right here in our own bay area. 7,000 men, armed with rifles and machine guns, have been pitted against but one single fighting machine. From it's obvious that nothing was able to stop that heat beam or whatever it is. Those who were not burned in a split second were trampled by the huge metal feet. From what we could see, it appeared to be headed up the freeway toward Highway 50, the main route to Sacramento. We were trying to establish some contact with the East Bay or the state capital, but so far it seems that all lines are dead. One report states that all major air and rail traffic for Oakland and San Francisco has been discontinued, but we've not been able to reconfirm this report. The west end of the Bay and Richmond-San Rafael bridges are jammed with six lanes of cars all heading for San Francisco and Marin. Martial law has been declared now for all of Northern California. We now hook into all major networks for a special message from Washington, D.C. Here is the Secretary of the Interior.
Citizens of the nation, I shall not try to conceal the gravity of the situation that confronts not only California, but the entire country now, nor the concern of your government in protecting the lives and property of its people. However, I wish to impress upon you, private citizens and public officials, all of you, the urgent need of calm and resourceful action. Fortunately, this formidable enemy is still confined to a comparatively small area, and we may place our faith in the military forces to keep them there. In the meantime, placing our faith in God, we must continue the performance of our duties, each and every one of us, so that we may confront this destructive adversary.
Shift to 24 meters. Projection, 24 degrees. Ready, fire! Damn it, still can't see. Range, 23 meters. Projection, 22 degrees. Ready!
This is Army Air Force Bomber V-843, Captain Voigt, commanding 8 heavy bombers, reporting to Colonel Amsterdam at Hamilton Air Force Base. This is Captain Voigt to Colonel Amsterdam, reporting position of lead plane, coming west off the bay near Candlestick Cove, South San Francisco, dead ahead. Sighting enemy tripod machines now at 11 o'clock, seem to be 6 altogether, one machine partially crippled, believed hit by artillery shell. Guns now appear to be silent. A heavy black smoke hanging close to the earth. Smoke of extreme density, nature unknown. No sign of a heat ray. The enemy seems to be moving north. Possible objective, San Francisco. One machine near Southern Pacific Traction Yard. 1,000 yards from us. 600. 400. 200. Look out. A giant arm. Green flash spraying us with flame. Engine dying.
I'm speaking to you now from the roof of the KPEN studios on Nob Hill in San Francisco. The bells you hear are ringing to warn the people to evacuate the city as the Martians approach. We don't know where people are supposed to go. Both the Bay and the Golden Gate bridges have been hopelessly snarled by mobs of panic-stricken humanity. There's the possibility that Skyline Boulevard has still been kept open as an emergency evacuation route, but our last reports told us that all traffic was snarled. I can see Treasure Island and Alameda Naval Air Station. They're covered with a black smoke. All communications are cut off. No more defenses. Planes burned from the sky. The Army, the Navy, everything wiped out. This is undoubtedly our last broadcast. I don't know how long we're going to be able to stay with you from up here, but we'll certainly try to stay with you until the end. But now the people are flocking. They're flocking into Grace Cathedral. Some are holding the services right out there on Huntington Square. I look now toward the Embarcadero. Hello, are we still on? As I mentioned, we'll try to stay with you here as long as we possibly can. Right now, the
boats are all seem to be pulling away from the docks. They're all overloaded with fleeing population. Streets are all jammed. It's incredible, the sound. Oh, look out there now. Look, I see them out there now. They're just in sight by the base. Are we still on? I see them out there. You see them out there? There are five of them out there. The giant machines. They're now taking giant strides over the ramps like runners taking hurdles. Bulletins now being handed to me. See if I can even read. I can even read one here. I'll see if I can. My hands are shaking. I hardly even read the paper here. It says Martian cylinders are falling all over the country. Buffalo, Chicago, St. Louis. Seem to be timed. They seem to be spaced. Now I can see the first machine. It's reached Market Street. It's at the foot of Powell Street. It seems to be waiting for the others. It seems to be standing there looking around, surveying our big buildings up here. Now what are they doing now? They're lifting their metal hands. There's smoke coming out. There's black smoke. It's drifting out all over our beautiful city. People are running in every direction now. Some are jumping off the docks like rats. The smoke, it's coming up our way now. It's coming up here toward Nob Hill. It looks like it's even reached Union Square. The people are running everywhere I look. They're all running, but it's no use. They're falling down there like flies. It's moving up here to Sutter. The smoke is moving up the hill. It's moving up to Birch. It's moving up to Pine.
Listening to the second presentation in the KPEN Stereo Drama Workshop series, an adaptation of the Orson Welles Mercury Theater presentation of The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
In case you've tuned in late and are a little bit confused, don't be. This is Bud Carey. It's Old Radio Theater, and you hear us each week on KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley and KFCF in Fresno. What we're doing today, we got permission from KPEN to play their 1964 stereo version of War of the Worlds, and now we'll get back to it.
As I set down these notes on paper, I'm obsessed by the thought that I may be the last living man on Earth. I've been hiding in this empty house in Berkeley, overlooking what appears to be a Bay Area covered with black smoke instead of the sometimes familiar fog. All that happened before the arrival of these monstrous creatures on the world now seems part of another life. A life that has no continuity with that of a Dr. Raymond Lyons, professor of astronomy at the University of California at Berkeley. I look down at my blackened hands as I write these words, and I see my torn clothes. I try to connect what I see with what I was viewing through the giant telescope at Lesher Observatory on that night the eruptions were noticed on the face of the planet Mars. In writing down my daily life, I tell myself I shall preserve human history between the dark covers of this little book that was meant to record the movement of the stars. But to write, I must live. And to live, I must eat. I find moldy bread in the kitchen and an orange not too spoiled to swallow. I keep a watch at the window. From time to time, I catch a sight of a Martian above the black smoke. But at length there is a hissing sound, and suddenly I see a Martian mounted on his machine, spraying the air with a jet of steam, as if to dissipate the smoke. I watch in a corner as his huge metal legs nearly brush against the house. Exhausted by terror, I fall asleep. Now it's morning. Sun streams in the window. A black cloud of gas has lifted. I venture from the house. I make my way to a road. No traffic. Here and there, a wrecked car, baggage overturned, blackened skeleton. I push on south. For some reason, I feel safer trailing these monsters than running away from them. And I keep a careful watch. I wander in a vague southerly direction through a desolate world. Finally, I notice a living creature. A small red squirrel in a tree. I stare at him and I wonder. He stares back at me. I believe at that moment the animal and I share the same emotion. The joy of finding another living being. I push on. Next day I came to a city, vaguely familiar in its contours, yet its buildings strangely dwarfed and leveled off as if a giant had sliced the tops off its buildings with a capricious sweep of his hand. I found Oakland undemolished, but humbled by some whim of the advancing Martians. Presently, with an odd feeling of being watched, I caught sight of something crouching in a doorway. I made a step toward it, and it rose up and became a man. A man armed with a large knife.
Stop! Where you come from?
I come from Berkeley.
What? Where did you say?
Berkeley. The University of California. Or at least I think that's...
Berkeley? Huh. That's near Richmond.
Yes.
Richmond? There's no food here. This is my country. All this end of the town down to the bay. There's only food for one. Which way are you going?
I don't know. I guess I'm looking for people.
What was that? You hear something just there? Listen.
What? Well, it's only a bird. Imagine. A live bird.
Well, you gotta be careful of everything that moves. Say, you're out the open here. Crawl over here in this doorway and let's talk.
Have you seen any Martians?
They got over to San Francisco. At night, the sky's alive with their lights. Just like the city was still alive. Daylight, you can't see them. 5 days ago, a couple of them carried something big across the tracks from the airport. I think they're learning how to fly.
And as far as you know, it's all over for humanity. All over. But stranger, there's still you and I, two of us left.
They got themselves in solid. They wrecked the greatest country in the world. Those big green stars have probably fallen somewhere every night. They've only lost one machine.
Where were you? You're in uniform.
What's left of it? I was in the National Guard. That's good. Wasn't any war any more than there's a war between man and ants.
We're the ants. The edible ants, I found out. What will they do to us?
I got it all thought out. Right now, we're caught when we're needed. The Martian, he's only got to go a mile or two to get a crowd in the run. But they won't keep on doing that. They'll start catching us systematic-like. Keeping the best and storing us in cages and things. Why, they haven't even begun on us yet.
Haven't begun?
Nope. Don't you get it? All that's happened so far is because we don't have sense enough to keep quiet. Bothering them with guns and stuff. And losing our heads and rushing off in crowds. Listen. I want to live. And so do you. I'm not going to be caught or exterminated. They're not going to put me in some stinking cage and fatten me up like a cow.
What are you going to do?
I'm going on. Right under their feet. I got a plan. We men, as men, are finished. We don't know enough. We got to learn plenty before we get a chance. And we got to live and keep free while we're learning.
Tell me the rest.
Well, it isn't everyone that's made to be wild beasts. That's why I watched you. All these little office workers that used to live in these houses, they'd be no good. They got no stuff to them. They just used to run off to work. I've seen hundreds of them running wild in the mornings to catch their buses or commuter trains or tearing bumper to bumper along the freeways, scared they'd get canned if they was late. Then running back at night, scared they might miss their dinner. Lives all insured and a little put away in case of accidents. And on Sundays, worried about the hereafter. The Martians will be a godsend to those guys.
Nice, roomy cages, good food, careful breeding. No worries, see? After a week or so of chasing around the fields on empty stomachs, they'll be glad to be caught.
In the meantime, you and I and others like us, where are we to live when Martians own the Earth?
Like I say, I got it all figured out. We'll live underground. I've been thinking about the sewers. Under San Francisco, there's miles and miles of them. The main ones are big enough for everybody. Then there's cellars, vaults, underground storerooms and garages, railroad tunnels. You begin to get it, huh? And we'll get a bunch of strong men together. No weak sisters, see?
And you meant me to go.
Well, I gave you a chance, didn't I?
We won't quarrel about that. Go on.
And we've got to make safe places for us to hide, see? And get all the books we can, science books. That's where guys like you come in, see? We'll raid the museums. We'll even spy on the Martians. It may not be so long before... Hey, just picture this. Four or five of their own fighting machines suddenly start off heat rays right and left. And not a Martian in them. Not a Martian in them. But men. Men who've learned the way how. Why, it even may be in our own lifetime. Imagine having one of those things all loaded up with heat rays, ready to blast. We turn it on the Martians. We turn it on men, too. Anybody who got in our way. We'd bring everybody right down on their knees.
That's your plan.
You and me, a few more of us, we could own the world.
I see.
Hey, what's the matter? Where are you going?
Not to your world. Goodbye, stranger. I turned and left the artilleryman where he stood, crouching in his corner. I walked a little more bravely now as I approached the Oakland side of the Bay Bridge. I passed the deserted toll plaza skirting the thousands of abandoned automobiles and managed to get to the lower ramp. Cautiously, I walked its length, anxious to know the fate of the great city at the other end of the bridge. I moved down the first off-ramp and carefully made my way to Lower Market Street. I stood not far from the Embarcadero Freeway and the still half-hidden landmark, a ferry building. A clock had long since been stopped. There were several bodies to be seen and swirls of black powder on the ground. An evil, ominous smell came up from the gratings and cellars of some of the warehouses and offices. I walked up Market Street. I stood alone at Powell and Market when a dog came running across the street with a piece of dark brown meat in his jaws, a pack of starving mongrels at his heels. He made a wide circle, just about where the familiar cable cars would make their turns, as though he feared I might prove a fresh competitor. I continued walking up Market, past silent shop windows, 88-cent bargains still on the counters waiting for customers, past the movie theaters, silent and dark, past barbershops and shooting galleries, past the giant hole that once was the Fox Theater, destroyed before the Martians came. I turned up Van Ness and saw shiny 1964 cars in the shop windows, the showrooms, facing the empty street. I looked up in the sky and saw a huge flock of seagulls over the Jack Tar Hotel. I hurried on after watching them wing their way towards the bay. Soon I caught my first glimpse of the Martians. Actually, it was the hood of one of their giant machines standing half in the water, silhouetted by the late afternoon sun. An insane idea. I rushed right down the street and into the shell of a new apartment building. From high up on one of its balconies,
I could see the silent row below me. I could hardly believe my own eyes. But so much had seemed so incredible at this point. Yes. There they were. 19 of the monster's machines standing silent along the beach, their steel arms hanging listlessly by their sides. I looked in vain for the monsters that inhabit those machines. Suddenly, my eyes were attracted to the immense flock of birds and gulls that hovered directly below me. They circled to the ground, and there before my eyes, stark and silent, lay the Martians, with the hungry birds pecking and tearing brown shreds of flesh from their dead bodies. Later, when their bodies were examined in laboratories, it was found that they were killed by the putrefactive and diseased bacteria against which their systems were unprepared. Slain after all man's defenses had failed by the humblest thing that God in his wisdom put upon this earth. Before the cylinder fell, there was an almost general persuasion that through all of our solar system, no life existed beyond the petty surface of our minute sphere. Now we see further. It may be that the destruction of the Martians is only a reprieve. To them, and not to us, is the future ordained, perhaps. Strange it now seems to sit in my peaceful study here in Berkeley, writing down this last chapter of the record that began not far from here in that industrial park in Richmond. Strange to see from the window the campanile and the other familiar buildings of the campus. Strange to watch the children playing in the streets. Strange to see young people strolling on the campus where the new spring grass heals the last black scars of the bruised earth. Strange to watch the sightseers enter the museum where the dissembled parts of a Martian machine are kept on public view. Strange. Yes, very strange. When I recall the first time I saw it, bright and clean cut, odd and silent, on that historic day.
Stereo Drama Workshops, an adaptation of the famous Orson Welles Mercury Theater production of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. The KPEN Special Events Department has been most fortunate to obtain the services of some of the actors from San Francisco's distinguished theater, the Playhouse at Beach and Hyde. Heard in the cast of our fictional presentation were Dion Chassé as Dr. Lyon, George Hitchcock as the artilleryman, Bob Atkinson as the United Press reporter, Fred Wilmoth was Bruce Bishop. Bob Conover impersonated the Secretary of the Interior.
A.J. Esta played Captain Voight. Hank Brown was Major Watkins. And Morgan Upton played Captain Lansing. Technical direction was by James Gabbard, with sound effects created by KPEN's engineering staff. Tonight's Stereo Drama Workshop presentation, War of the Worlds, was recorded on audio tape, adapted for stereo by your host and producer, Wayne Jordan. Saddle the Unicorn, the new musical fable by Dennis Dunn and Warner Jepson, under the direction of A.J. Esta, has its final performances at the Playhouse, Beach and Hyde Streets, Fridays and Saturdays, June 19th, 20th, 21st. 27th at 8:30.
Well, there you had it. The KPEN version of War of the Worlds. I think it's really quite well done. And our thanks to the people at KPEN for letting us play it on KPFA. This is Bud Carey. It's Old Radio Theater. I hope you'll join us next week. Thanks for listening.